Good evening. It is now 6:32, so we will go ahead and get started. Today is November 1st. My name is Lori Garris. I am with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's Office of Chief Clerk. Joining me tonight are our speakers at the table. We have Amy Browning, Holly Landut, Doug Boyer, Anita Keys, and Jason Ibarra. Thank you for joining me for tonight's stakeholder meeting. This meeting is part of a resolution of EPA complaint number 02NO20R6. I hope everyone had a chance to look at our air equipment and talk to our experts and are ready to learn more about our public participation processes. Before we begin, though, I'd like to go over a few logistics. First, I see some of you covered up, and it is a little chilly in here, and we have asked for the air conditioner to be turned off. So hopefully it will be a little warmer very soon. Second, if you just came in here, if you go out these doors and to the right, there are restrooms and water fountains, just in case you need them. As Ms. DeMasi noted, this meeting is being interpreted. So please speak clearly and at a good pace so that your information can be interpreted. And if you need a headset and just walked in, our back table back there will be able to help you. The purpose of this stakeholder meeting is to provide you with information on how TCEQ works, as well as how you can participate in TCEQ processes. This evening, we will discuss public participation in TCEQ permitting processes, how the complaint process works, information related to emergency response activities, and interpreting ambient air quality data. The format for today's meeting is to begin with the TCEQ staff presentations. After presentations, we will have time for questions and answers. During the question and answer period, the public is encouraged to ask questions and to engage in open discussions with TCEQ staff. Although we will be listening to and taking notes on your questions and comments and concerns, there will be no formal comment period as this is a stakeholder meeting. So now we are ready for our TCEQ staff presentations. Amy, if you would like to come on up.
Sorry, I need to go back. Okay. Good evening, and thank everyone very much for coming out this evening. We really appreciate you guys coming out to our meeting. Am I on the right slide? No, sorry. There we go. I'm going to speak very briefly today about the public participation in the TCEQ permitting process and about the different types of permits that are issued by the TCEQ. As Lori said, my name is Amy Browning. I'm an attorney with the Office of Legal Services, representing the Executive Director. So the types of permits issued by TCEQ, very generally, we have water quality and availability permits, waste permits, and air quality permits. As you can see, we generally describe these as being the different media, air, water, and waste. In water quality and water availability, these are some of the many different types of permits that you see, and they all have their own individual requirements that each and every one of these we could spend an hour talking about just on their own. Same thing for waste. So we have these different types of waste permits. Some of these that you might be familiar with would be the kind of permits that you might see for things like municipal solid waste, things related to landfills and, you know, where your trash goes when it leaves your house, things like that. And then for air quality permits are divided into two major groups, minor permits and major permits. And minor permits are further subdivided as to permit by rules, standard permits, and minor new source review, while major permits are divided into PSD, or prevention of significant deterioration, non-attainment, and hazardous air pollutants. Just to take 1 minute, because Houston is located in an ozone non-attainment area, non-attainment permits, generally speaking, have more stringent requirements than PSD permits. And both PSD permits and non-attainment permits are generally for larger sources, while minor permits are for smaller sources. Public participation in the permitting process is governed by several rules and statutes. The statutes were established by the TCEQ legislature with House Bill 801 in the 76th legislature in 1999, and then amended in 2015 by the 84th legislature with Senate Bill 709. The rules that came out of these statutes are codified at 30 Texas Administrative Code in chapters 39, 55, and 80. So what do you talk about when you talk about public participation in permitting? One of the first things that you have to think about is notice, because notice tells you that there is something available for you to participate in. So a notice is something that is put out there that gives the public information about a potential permitting activity. Notice is provided by the applicants, but in most cases is also actually mailed out by the TCEQ as well and posted on the TCEQ website. There are different types of notices required for different types of permits. Generally speaking, you often have two different notices, although some types of permits may only have one. But we'll talk about that more in just a minute. When are the notices sent out to the public? Well, the notice is sent out when the agency receives an application and determines that that application is administratively complete and is ready to move forward with being reviewed by the agency. Generally speaking, the type of information that's in a notice is the location for the proposed facility, what the proposed facility will do. For example, are they proposing to put in a landfill? Is it a refinery? Is it some type of small chemical operation? Is it a stormwater permit? There are many different types of applications, and that would be the basic information that would be in a notice. The first notice is called the Notice of Receipt of Application and Intent to Obtain Permit, also known as the NORI. So you'll often hear us refer to the NORI notice or to the first notice. And it provides an opportunity for the public to know that a permit action is occurring, that someone has applied to the agency for a permit. This is an important thing for certain types of applications. For example, for minor NSR air permits and concrete batch plants, contested case hearing requests, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute, we must have received at least one contested case hearing request during the NORI for the opportunity to request a hearing to remain throughout the remainder of the comment period. The second notice is known as the Notice of Application and Preliminary Determination, or a NAPD. Again, NAPD is the acronym, also Second Public Notice, and this is a notice that the executive director has reached a preliminary decision on a permit application and that a draft permit is ready for review and comment. Again, you can have the opportunity to request a contested case hearing on applications during this time period as well, during the notice. Some types of permit applications, occasionally different types, will have something called a consolidated notice, sometimes called a consolidated NORI and NAPD, or sometimes just called a consolidated notice. But that information would be provided in the notice itself, and it would be clear what the comment period would be on the notice. So that's an important piece of information that you find in the notice itself, is what is the duration of the comment period. You also have public meetings. So when there is significant public interest in an application, the agency may hold a public meeting if a public meeting has been requested, Or also, if a public meeting has been requested by a local legislator, the agency will hold a public meeting. And that gives the public the opportunity to ask questions of the applicant and of TCEQ staff. So TCEQ staff from the permitting program, from the Office of the Chief Clerk, and from the Office of Legal Services would be at the public meeting available to answer questions. If you want to request a public meeting on a permit application, you submit a request to the Office of the Chief Clerk with the permit number and that you would like to have a public meeting on the application. At the public meeting, there's an informal question and answer comment period where you get the chance to ask questions and have those questions answered. And then there is a formal comment period where the public is allowed to make formal oral comments on a meeting. So you can make comments either formally during the oral portion of a public meeting, or you may make comments in writing on any permit. The executive director will respond to all timely comments that are received on any permit application in a formal written response to comment document. Anyone that's on the mailing list for the permit application or for the county will receive notification that that formal RTC is available once it has been filed. And so the way you get to be on the mailing list, either for a permit application or for the county, is you submit a request to the chief clerk's office that you would like to be on the mailing list. You can submit public comments on the commission's website, by fax, by mail, or orally at a public meeting. The information your comments should contain would be information about how you are potentially impacted by the proposed facility, and the questions and concerns that you may have about the proposed facility, or questions that you might have about the draft permit. You should submit these timely within the comment period that is listed in the public notice. The dates for when public comment periods end also get listed on the commission's integrated database as well. You should submit comments if you have concerns about a permit application or if you think that you might want to request a contested case hearing. To be a party in a contested case hearing, which is the next thing I'm going to talk about, you have to have submitted timely comments on an application. What's a contested case hearing? Contested case hearing is basically like a trial without a jury. It has testimony, it has evidence, and experts to ask questions about a permit application. A request for a contested case hearing must have submitted timely comments and a timely hearing request. The request must be in writing, and the requester must explain how they are affected in a manner that is different than the general public. One of the ways that you do this is you tell us where you're located. Are you located right next door to the proposed plant? How far away from it might you be? Do you have potential health concerns with the proposed plant? So you need to, if you wanted to be an effective party for a contested case hearing, you need to detail how you would be potentially impacted differently than the general public. Requests for a contested case hearing go before the commissioners at a public agenda, and the commissioners make decisions on whether or not to refer matters to a contested case hearing, although occasionally some applicants will also do a direct referral to SOA. What's SOA? SOA is the State Office of Administrative Hearings. This is the state agency that hears contested case hearings. They have an administrative law judge. Sorry. You have an administrative law judge who will hear the evidence and the testimony that's presented in the contested case hearing and will then make what's called a proposal for a decision, which is a proposal for what the judge believes the evidence determines for whether or not the permit should be issued or not. And then that proposal for decision goes back before the commissioners, and the commissioners make an actual decision on the permit. And Thank you. Again, my name is Amy Browning. If you have questions, you can send them to me at amy.browning@tceq.texas.gov. And thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Holly Landit, and I am a senior network specialist and work leader in the ambient monitoring section of the monitoring division. I appreciate your time this evening. It was really beneficial to get to speak with many of you. I'm going to walk you through the steps to access ambient air monitoring data. So ambient air monitoring in Texas began as early as the 1960s with roughly 30 air monitoring stations. And today, Texas has one of the largest monitoring networks in the nation, consisting of roughly 230 air monitoring stations with over 500 individual pollutant monitors. The TCEQ owns over half of the Texas air monitoring network. An additional air monitoring is conducted by partner organizations such as local governments, universities, nonprofit organizations, and industry to expand our air monitoring coverage in Texas. The Texas air monitoring data are available to our data customers and the general public online through the TCEQ air monitoring database. The Federal Clean Air Act established air monitoring standards for 6 criteria pollutants. The TCEQ monitors ambient air concentrations of these and other pollutants at stationary air monitoring sites throughout the state. Our federal monitoring requirements are determined by the Environmental Protection Agency, and they're discussed in Title 40 of the Code of Federal Regulations, or the CFR. These regulations include requirements for the how and the where, the quality assessment requirements, the types of equipment, of what we use, and how we site our monitors and where we locate them. Each pollutant has very specific monitoring requirements that are spelled out in the CFR. We maintain a very robust network of state initiative monitors in addition to our federal network. And these include monitoring for volatile organic compounds and hydrogen sulfide. So air monitoring information is very easily accessible from the TCEQ homepage with just 2 clicks. So I'm going to show you how to do that today. So you're going to start with the TCEQ homepage, and that's at www.tceq.texas.gov, and it's important Texas is spelled out. So starting on the home page, 2 clicks, right? You're going to start with air, click on that, and that's going to open you to the next page, and right here at the top center is air quality and monitoring. So your next step will be to click that. That's going to take you to our air quality and monitoring home page. This home page contains information about the monitoring network. It has answers to frequent questions that have been asked. It provides a variety of links to our air monitoring sites, a geographical interface, and the data. So up here on the right-hand side of the page are quite a few links that I'm going to go over today. Here you have the Texas Air Quality Forecast. I know it's kind of small, but you'll see it bigger in just a minute. And there, here in the middle, is a map, and that's our geographical interface map. It's basically a Google Earth with our air monitoring sites on it that is a wealth of information. And I'll show you how to use that, too. So today's Texas Air Quality Forecast. This is distributed daily via an email notification, and this is an alert that you can actually sign up from the TCEQ homepage. It's also posted on the webpage, and it's updated daily. So when you click on Texas Today's Air Quality Forecast, you're going to see the regional air quality, and these are all of our main regions. And here is Houston, that's kind of in the middle here. This was a snippet, just one day in time. And if you click on your region of interest, and here I clicked on Houston, it's going to actually take you to the Environmental Protection Agency's Air Now webpage, and this will give you more air quality information, and you can even put in your zip code and really drill down and see what's happening in your neighborhood. It's a very, very useful tool. So, as I mentioned earlier, on the air monitoring webpage, we have the Texas Air Monitoring Information System, or TAMIS. So just another acronym for y'all. This is the database with all of the information about our air monitoring sites. Our data is in near real time, and this is where you can access it. And I'm going to show you in just a few more clicks. So going back to GeoTAM, that's our interactive graphical display of our Texas air monitoring stations. It allows users to zoom in to a specific area or sites. And if you select an air monitoring site, set the little circles with the colors, it's going to provide you with additional information about the sites and the samplers, the air monitoring that's actually happening at that site. And then the near real-time data that you can see. There is a legend that you can open that will identify what all the colors mean. So some sites may have one or two monitors, and some sites may have 5 or 10 or more. And the legend will identify all the different samplers. And so for this example, I've zoomed in with GeoTAM, that's right here in this corner, and into the Houston Ship Channel. And in the Houston Ship Channel, there's quite a few air monitoring sites, but if you take your mouse or your cursor and you hover over the circle pie chart for Clinton right in the middle, and sometimes you might need to zoom in just a little bit further, and if you click on that, up is going to pop some site information very specific to that site. And so right here under the name, it says site information. If you click on site information, it's going to bring you to another screen, and you're going to start off with, you've got a ribbon here, and it says basic information. So that's your site logistics, the address, city, county, lat long. And right next to that, if you click on monitoring information, it's going to bring you to another page, this one over here, and it's going to show all of the active monitors at that site. So, and if you want to go back in time and say, okay, this air monitoring site has been here for 30 years, has the air monitoring changed over years, you can unclick show active monitoring and see the historical monitoring at that site as well. And over here on the right hand of that page, it says data options. So this is where you can find the daily ambient air monitoring data. So you're going to click on current data. Right here, any of these current data fields will take you to the next screen, which is this pop-up over here. And this is going to show you the data at that site for an entire day, and it's going to be the hourly averages. So we're going to post the hourly data that our analyzers sample and average on this screen. There's also another option if you go up here where you can do more detailed reports. You can run a monthly report or a yearly report for a site, and that data is also, you can, if you want to download it or export it into a comma delimited and put it into Excel, it's also available for you there as well. And then lastly, we do have photos of our site. So if you want to see what does an air monitoring site look like, it's going to have an overall view and then all the cardinal direction photos around the ambient air monitoring site. Okay, so that's how you get the data. We do have some flyers on how to do this. And if you didn't get one, we have a few more on the table in the back.
Hey everybody, my name is, there we go. Hey Hey, my name is Doug Boyer. I'm with the Air Quality Division. I'm going to briefly talk about how we use and interpret the air quality data that Holly just talked about and how you can access that. So we have a lot of different ways that we do look at this data, but the main one is to determine compliance with the federal health-based standards. And so we take a look at the data and then use the appropriate metric to see if it's if an area is meeting that standard or not. Diving down a little bit deeper, we're going to analyze trends to see how things have been changing over time. And certainly we're going to evaluate days or events that may have higher pollutant concentrations. And then we have some other programs that we're going to support as well. So I'm going to show just a couple charts and graphics here. And so the first one we're talking about is comparing to the federal health-based standards. And this chart shows the different urban areas within the state of Texas. The left-hand side has the Houston area. It goes to Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, El Paso. And on there, this is talking about that federal health-based standard for ozone pollution at ground level. And Amy mentioned earlier that the Houston area does not meet that standard. And so its bar is above that federal health-based standard of 70 or 75 ppb. And the same with Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, El Paso. And a lot of urban areas within the country have this challenge. But then you can see perhaps some of the other areas that are there within our state. And this is preliminary data from this past year. And so this is one way that we do take a look at the data. I'm going to show briefly here, we talked about trends. And so this shows some different time periods in the Houston area from 2012 on the left to 2016 and 2021. And each of the dots there is a monitor that's measuring ozone within the area. And then we have a colored spatial field that's representing the ozone concentrations. And so you see on the far left, you have these warmer colors throughout a lot of the city. And then as we move through 2016 until last year, those colors have become significantly cooler. And that's showing us the trend of ozone concentrations over time, and especially those higher values that are more important to our human health. And so this is a significant ozone decrease, and that's great. And it's also during the time when the Houston area has added a significant number of people, the population has increased a lot. And so this is just one way that we evaluate some of the data that we have and look at trends. I also wanted to invite you guys to interact more with us and learn about our air quality updates. And I've listed some different ways, some different topics that you could subscribe to via our Gov delivery service on our website. And so any of these topics you can subscribe to and get emails about some of the air quality actions that the agency is undertaking. And if you have any additional contacts for myself or Holly, our contact information is there. And again, I thank you guys for being here today.
Hello. How is everybody today? It is freezing. I'm so grateful y'all came out tonight. My name's Anita Keese. I've been working for the TCEQ about 19 years, and a good part of that time has been either taking or conducting complaint investigations or talking about our complaint policy, because this is such a fundamentally important thing that the TCEQ does, and we put a lot of emphasis on it. So I have a lot to cover, so I'm going to go kind of fast. Bear with me. All right. First of all, we take complaints lots of different ways. We have an online portal where you can fill out a series of questions and submit complaints to us that way. And that's 24/7, 365 days a year, right? Also, we have a number of email addresses you can use to submit complaints to us as well. We have complaint at TCEQ. You can also add an S to that, and it'll still get to us. We also have Geha and we have Gehas. So also, if you can add an S, because we know how people are and they don't always remember, right? So we're trying to make it easy for you guys. We also have a 1-800 number that we take complaints. Also, you know, any holiday, day or night, we will take complaints that way as well. But sometimes you want to talk to a person. And if you want to talk to a human being, you can contact any of our 16 different regional offices. You can call Austin too, definitely. But we do have 16 different regional offices. Those folks live in your community. They're affected by the same things you're affected by. And sometimes you just want to have that one-on-one conversation. So you're welcome to go on our website and contact any of the regional offices and file the complaint that way as well. So what can we help you with? There's a lot of things TCEQ can do, but we can't do everything, right? So I'm going to go through some of these, and hopefully some of these pique some interest for you guys in terms of what we can do for you. One of them is if you see water that may be polluted. And when I talk about water, I'm talking about surface water bodies primarily. So if there's a creek you like to hike by and you see some dead fish, or if you see somebody discharging anything or disposing of anything into a water body, we really would love to know about that, right? So that's a really good example of a complaint that we can absolutely handle. If you see or smell something unpleasant in the air, so this one's a very common complaint we receive. If you live next to any kind of industry, but you are affected on your own property with some really unpleasant odors, please let us know. This is what we do. Also, if you see land that's contaminated, when I say land, what we're really looking for is spills of chemicals. Because we've ended up, because of some complaints, with some really interesting cases, because sometimes you'll have a small business that's collecting waste, and they get overwhelmed by it because it's expensive to properly dispose of waste, and they put it on like 55-gallon drums that don't last forever, and they might not label those drums. So these are the kind of scenarios that if you become aware of this in your community, we absolutely can handle these scenarios, right? So if you have problems with your drinking water, this is another really common one. Drinking water is very much a focus at our agency. If you taste and odor is a very nuanced thing, but if you do experience issues with your water, you find it unpleasant to drink, especially if it's cloudy, that's really problematic for drinking water, let us know. We will come in and do an investigation and find out if that water is being treated properly and distributed throughout your water pipes properly. So, also, if you have information or evidence about an environmental problem, we run into this sometimes with people who are very familiar with environmental regulations, like they're a consultant or they work in the environmental field, where they have evidence they want to share with us. Sometimes we get very interesting complaints that way because these people have, you know, insider knowledge. Those kind of scenarios we can absolutely help with, right? Anonymously as well, because I know that's a big concern when people are in the industry. So we also are a licensure agency. We issue licenses for a number of different industries, primarily drinking water, wastewater, landfills. If somebody's installed septic systems in your property, we license them too, and irrigation systems as well. So if you have an issue and you believe they're not following environmental laws, we can absolutely do a complaint investigation related to that as well. And finally, this happens a lot where your neighborhoods are changing and industries encroaching into your property, and you want to just know, you don't know if this facility has an appropriate license or you don't know what permit they hold, or you're just concerned they're not operating properly, give us a call. We can help you walk you through that. And we get a lot of complaint investigations that result in violations because of this last one, where folks are not licensed or are not permitted properly and don't have the appropriate authorization to be operating. All right, evidence. This is very interesting to a lot of people. So we do have the ability to cite violations based on evidence that you provide, that the public provides. However, if we get in this scenario where you have provided evidence and we're going to have you actually be the person who behaves as kind of our expert witness, we're going to ask some more things of you, right? That doesn't mean we want you not to submit us any information, because that might sound scary. I don't want to get on a court case and be an expert witness. However, in some cases, we are not able to obtain the information that you have. So it's very, very valuable information. And we're going to ask you to do these things, one or more of these things. One of them is to sign an affidavit with a notary public to make sure that you're meeting these other criteria. This is a common request that we'll send out to you guys when we get some information or evidence from you guys. There is a scenario, it's very infrequent, but there is a scenario in where we might have you guys actually testify in a court. So know that that's a possibility. And then we do need to make sure that you have followed TCQ's requirements, because we have to follow those requirements. We have EPA requirements. We have EPA methods we have to use for collecting and testing, say, water. If you take a sample from your water tap, we can't rely on uncertifiable equipment. We have to use certain kinds of equipment that we can calibrate. We have to make sure we're using the appropriate method to test water. So if you're going to be providing that information to us, it stands to reason that we need to make sure you're using those same methods, right? If that makes sense. And then finally, we need to make sure we don't want anyone getting in trouble gathering information for our complaint investigations. We need you to certify that you have legally obtained this information. No theft, no trespassing. Need to make sure this has been legally obtained information, right? And then finally, do understand that if we get to that point, and it's fairly infrequent, but if we get to that point, your identity may be disclosed. So this is a sticking point, and I just don't want it to discourage you guys from snapping a picture and sending it to us, right? Because this is a fairly rare occurrence, but we can benefit so much from having the public cooperate with us in this way. All right, some examples of evidence. This is the kind of thing we're talking about, right? Odor logs. This is a big one where you guys can help us so much. Actually, site violations where it's been very difficult for our staff to obtain, especially odor logs, because odor is transitory, right? You'll smell an odor really, really strong at your home in the morning or late at night, and you tell us, I always smell this odor at 4 a.m. in the morning. And so we'll get our investigators to come out at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we come out 3 or 4 times, and we never are there when it smells as bad as you have documented, right? This is how you can use your evidence, your experience, documented on this form according to TCQ's policies, because this is a document we use too as investigators, and see if we can get a violation there. So work with our staff. I know we have staff that are very patient that will walk you through exactly how to fill out this form, but it is fairly intuitive. And this is, again, the kind of situation that can really get us to a better place with a facility that's really disturbing your peace, right? If you can't be in your backyard enjoying your own backyard because of a neighboring facility, this is what we can often use to get us there. Photographs. So we get photographs all the time, and this is the way people are now. Everybody's snapping pictures constantly. It's amazing, right? And sometimes folks want to send us photographs. That's amazing. You know, sometimes this is a wonderful starting point for us to get evidence. If we start with a photograph that you have sent to us, then we can begin an investigation, and a photograph's 1,000 words, right? So we get a lot of information just receiving that photograph. Photograph of smoke. There's so many different things that we get really good photographs from. So copies of records. Copies of records is one of those rare scenarios or those unusual circumstances in which you might have a competitor complaining against a competitor or an employee filing a complaint because they think that something's going wrong within the business that they work in. And sometimes they'll have copies of records. Again, legally obtained records. We want to make sure nobody gets in trouble for providing us these records. But we can end up with some really interesting complaint investigations because of copies of records, operational records. And then an affidavit. So I wanted to show you a quick copy of an affidavit, because this is a big one for us, is to make sure that you're able to legally testify. This is true factual information we are giving to the TCQ, right? And it does need to be signed in front of a notary. So, big question everybody has is, how long is it going to take for you to come out there? You file a complaint with us, you take the time to let us know of something that's bothering you in your community. How long is it going to take? You know, we have 16 different regional offices, and all those 16 different regional offices, we have at least 2 people that they know their job is to run out the door if there's an emergency response. And some of your complaints fall under that level, right, where we have heard your complaint out and we really need to go and roll right away. So we have people available to roll. However, most of the time, those complaints, we usually try to get them done within 30 days, no longer, right? We try, we have this set of criteria that helps guide how long it's going to take, but we try never to go beyond 30 days. So I did want to mention also that sometimes it's not within our jurisdiction. Sometimes we have a lot of local governments that do the same work that we do. And so we will often refer these to a local jurisdiction. So we might not necessarily do the complaint within 30 days, but we're going to refer it to somebody who can, right? And there's also some other state agencies that have the authority to investigate your particular complaint. We'll let you know who it is, and we'll let them know that you filed that complaint as well. So you want to know, you took the time, again, you took the time to file a complaint with us. You want to know what we decided. You want to know if your complaint resulted in a violation. We're going to let you know. If you give us contact information, we're going to let you know once that complaint is wrapped up. We have different ways of doing it now. We've gone beyond just the paper letter back to you. So you might get an email instead. But we're going to let you know the results. If you're anonymous, I'll show you the webpage where you can go and hunt down your complaint as well and find out what the status was. Just because you're anonymous, it's not a black hole. You can still find out what happened. So if, and this is always exciting, if we conduct an investigation and it results in an enforcement action, we are going to notify you as the time goes, because the enforcement actions sometimes take 2 years, even longer in some rare cases. We're going to notify you periodically throughout that process so that you are aware of how that's all going down. You also will have an opportunity to comment on the TCQ order before it's finalized. So sometimes this is very much of interest with somebody who has a particular violation in mind that they believe should be in that order. You will have an opportunity to comment. All right, so here's we call this WACI. Internally, we call this WACI, which I just think it's a funniest little acronym. But you can search your complaint here. This is available on our public website. The most useful search for most people is the date and the county. Of course, if we're in Harris County, you might want to drill down to program because we get a lot of complaints in Harris County. So this information, though, you can hunt down your complaint. The day you filed it, make a note of that, and you'll be able to find your complaint and see if we indeed cited a violation or even resulted in enforcement action. So you have access to that information. So what's really, really exciting for us is, and a lot of this is because of this work that we've been doing. We're trying to modernize our complaint receipt portal. So you can now go in there and file a complaint, but there's a lot of things you can't do right now. So we've been working, we bought some software, we've been working to modernize our complaint portal website. So largely because of complaints that we've heard from the public. First of all, I want you to know that TCQ's internal complaint policy is posted on our complaint website. So you can actually see the same document that the staff are obliged to comply with when they conduct complaint investigations. So you can actually read our internal policy. Next is, once we have that software, we're going to have that website's going to be very different. You can submit complaints, and it'll be a lot more user-friendly. You're going to receive this automated email. Right now, the process is you file your complaint, and the regional offices get your email, and then you need a human being to type up a response to you. Now it's going to be automated that will point you to some important information about what happens next, right? So it standardizes that communication, and everybody gets that communication right off. And then you can upload your evidence, right? You can go ahead and upload those photographs. People want to do that now. They want to take a picture of a smoke and send it right to us. You'll be able to do that now. We're very excited. Videos, too. Videos has been a sticking point for us, too. Short videos, you can send them our way. So, and it's really user-friendly. It accepts all different kinds of formats as well. So most critical to this meeting is you'll be able to submit a complaint in the language of your choice. We're going to be adding languages as we see the need to, but we're trying to start off with at least 3 additional languages beyond English, which is great. We're very excited. I know I'm very excited to finally see this happen. You're going to have that complaint with the questions in Spanish. You can complete it in Spanish, and then you can get the reply back in Spanish. So we will know by doing that that you want to talk to somebody on the phone in Spanish too. So it'll make that whole process a little less cumbersome for you guys. So it's also important for us because we say this a lot. We say that we address every single complaint that comes in the door. But I know there's been these occasions that always nag me a little where somebody will say, I filed a complaint in February and nobody did anything. And those scare me because I feel like we put so much emphasis and we try so hard to address this. I want to be able to go to a place and verify that you indeed submitted a complaint on this website, right? We will finally be able to do that. Because now we depend on people to enter in things in data, and we lose people periodically, and you know, we're human beings, we make mistakes, but my goodness, we want to be so much better at making sure that we capture every single complaint that comes in through our door. All right, so we also did an update to our complaint manual. This is a trifold. We have some in the hallway, the older version of this document. We updated our Do You Want to Make an Environmental Complaint document to be user-friendly for a iPhone, right? So it's got a lot of embedded links. It's got more language than historically had been provided. And we have worked very hard to make this a much more user-friendly document for you guys. So that's all I have. I appreciate your attention, and we'll be around afterwards for any questions.
Good evening. Everybody can hear me? Thumbs up? All right. I'm Jason Ibarra. I'm here with the Houston Regional Office of the TCEQ. So we're right off of Polk and Wayside, just down the street. And for me, I've been here with the agency over 25 years, first job out of college. So, you know, born and bred here in Second Ward. So thanks for coming out. So I'm just going to kind of give an overview of emergency response, kind of what we do here in the region. And like Anita was saying, we have 16 regions, so we all kind of follow the same playbook. So emergency response, we do have dedicated emergency response coordinators in every office that are in the office 8 to 5 and are on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And there's just some of our investigators, coordinators that are doing monitoring outside or, you know, kind of reviewing the incident. And, you know, kind of when we do emergency response, one thing that, you know, we always, you know, evaluate the situation and, you know, definitely look at community monitoring with the incident facility and additionally any local jurisdictions that have that capability as well. And additionally, you'll see, you know, taking water samples to verify drinking water standards. So the types of emergency response that come to, you know, our region and any region is just routine, you know, spills and discharges that are on, you know, I-10, 610 every morning when you hear the traffic reports. A lot of those things are going on every day in our city. And, you know, we review a lot of those incidents, and either the, you know, county hazmat or city of Houston hazmat, you know, would be doing a lot of those, you know, vehicle accidents. So kind of when we come into play is, you know, incident facilities that are at, you know, petrochemical facilities or facilities that, you know, blend those or manufacture those types of chemicals. We do fires and explosions at, you know, kind of in our region. And any large-scale incidents that would happen at our refineries and petrochemical facilities, then emergency response would be, you know, forefront in any of those occasions. Natural disasters is a big thing that the agency does. And what natural disasters and any type of local jurisdiction, we all come together as a unified command. And, you know, we all have different expertises and different rules and statutes that we follow. But we all come together at the end to evaluate it and get everybody back to their normal life. So notifications, you know, we get them all different ways. So we have what we call the natural National Response Center, which is the federal notification that would come through the federal channels that the state gets notification for. So a lot of federal rules or federal transportation, a lot of the companies would have to call through that route. And then we also have the State Emergency Response Commission, that anything to do with state statutes, then they would call that number and we would get that notification. And then we also get notifications through the phone 24 hours a day. And when those notifications come in, you know, we have, you know, different aspects of what's the chemical of concern, what's going on, and, you know, we'll talk with those environmental agencies that are out there, or the incident at the, you know, the commander at the facility, and ask them those questions of what was spilled, how much, you know, is there air monitoring being conducted? If local jurisdiction's there, they will be doing air, you know, air monitoring. So we're all trying to see, you know, how they've, you know, addressed the incident and, you know, what the state requires for them to do to clean up as well. So deployments, kind of like we talked before, we do a lot of natural disasters for, you know, support functions as any hazardous substance that's spilt, or, you know, vessel assessments for boats, you know, petrochemical facilities, orphan containers, the storm surge will come in, push a lot of things around. So we come together and evaluate all that with the hurricanes or, you know, different winter storms, and make sure that everybody's following the rules for that. We do air quality assessments, you know, kind of in our region throughout the state of Texas, where we do, you know, reconnaissance that we'll do monitoring out there. Y'all saw kind of the rapid assessment vehicles that were out there as well. So those are things that we use and do that in our region. And additionally, through kind of emergency response, where we have a lot of the air monitoring and different, you know, cool things that we use in the field to look at those chemicals of concern, you know, they'll support investigators in the field as well. So as we had the big van out there, and then the other vehicle with the Jeep Cherokee, if y'all saw it, you know, those are different aspects that we've added to our fleet to look at, you know, air monitoring at a mobile level. So those vehicles, you know, can look at, you know, targets that are in the area and chemicals of concern kind of real time through that equipment. So if everybody saw the Jeep, it's kind of, you know, has a UV, you know, array that they can look at volatiles that kind of pinpoint and drill down into the volatile organics like benzene, ethylbenzene, toluene, you know, different aspects like that. So we have one here in the region, and it can be deployed at any time. And then there was a picture that if y'all didn't see it out there. And then kind of what it does. So it has that UV spectrum, and it's looking for the target chemicals, you know, of that incident. If we're doing reconnaissance, surveillance, surveys, any type of, you know, review of industry, and also in community monitoring. So it's doing that real-time, you know, review, and it's picking up or not picking up, you know, benzene at the parts per billion. And it'll show like a little kind of what we call caterpillar trail, and they'll just drive and then start taking the survey through that. And then it'll drive through community neighborhoods and, you know, collect that data. And you can see it, you know, kind of moving where the vehicle is real time surveying, you know, for those analytes. And it'll go through, you know, the community in question, or if we're looking at kind of an incident, we're looking downwind, we're looking equidistant to, you know, what the weather is like, what the wind patterns are like, and then we're going to focus to ensure that the community, you know, has that protection. So one other thing that we do, you know, through the state of Texas is, you know, we have that this disaster response strike team. So me as a member of the disaster response strike team, if any other region, you know, kind of like Anita was saying, 16 regions for the state of Texas, if anybody else needs help, then, you know, we're all specialized in all different aspects, and we can go help out in any region through the disaster response strike team. So like we're saying, we're all multimedia investigators. You know, I can plug in and plug, you know, at any incident that I'm called upon or need that assistance. And you know, we can do any air monitoring, water monitoring, or waste analysis sampling. And, you know, kind of what it does for us is we have specialized individuals throughout the state. So if we have something that, you know, we need assistance on or backup, then we can just call them in and they can, you know, fulfill that and plug right in. And then also, as we have prolonged incidents, then we have another team that would come in and do the same thing just so we can get a little rest and then get back to the incident. So as we talked about air reconnaissance, you know, the things that we do is we have established areas, you know, throughout our region that we'll do air monitoring with the rapid assessment vehicles. We'll do air monitoring with handheld monitors, kind of like the ones you saw at the emergency response table. And we're just kind of doing that review of a little, you know, the fence line of facilities and, you know, additionally community monitoring to see if any of these industries are affecting. And then at that point, you know, it gives us information to go knock on the door to start seeing if we see a pattern, you know, for any of that reconnaissance that we're doing in different areas. And this is just kind of like, you know, if you're driving around and you're seeing a truck and an individual, that's kind of what they're doing. They're either doing air reconnaissance or they're doing community monitoring if anything is happening, and you can just see these individuals any time of the day. And as we talked about, you know, handheld monitoring and sample collection, you know, we're all trained and you know, we have all the equipment at hand when we go out on complaints, investigations, or any type of reconnaissance to do a kind of an array of sampling or monitoring. And kind of what we do is we're getting that information to verify, you know, compliance with the rules and regulations or compliance with their permits that they've received. And, you know, just to drill down a little bit more, you know, we do, you know, water parameters, you know, biological oxygen demand, total suspended solids, pH, and those are all different things that, you know, we can do, you know, surface water, you know, water that comes out of fire hydrants, anything that's, you know, within that water collection system or discharge system, you know, we have the availability to take those samples or screening parameters. And this is just kind of, you know, just some pictures of individuals out in the field taking samples in the ditch or taking, you know, drinking water samples or chlorine residual. And then we also have, you know, different specialized equipment that deal with landfills. You know, we can do surface surveys, leachate collection system surveys, and, you know, the gas collection systems. You know, we all have that type of equipment. And then if y'all saw if y'all went by the optical gas imaging camera, you saw the capabilities of that. So just to kind of show you, you know, we have the landfill gas monitor kind of in the corner, the toxic vapor analyzer, and then you can see the optical imaging where you have the tank battery, and then you can, I don't know if you can see the color where you see the levels within that tank, and then you can also check the emission points from those stacks as well. And then we have, you know, just an individual doing a reconnaissance or a survey with, you know, the multi-ray and the area ray at that given point. And it, you know, just gives us a little more, you know, information that we can, you know, support our documentation with investigations or complaints. So if everybody saw the cool display with the optical gas camera, you know, it's pretty amazing where, you know, it looks at the, you know, the source for the hydrocarbons. So you can see, you know, if valves are leaking or they didn't close it properly, or if there's some, you know, pipe thread or where that junction is that it may be leaking. You can, it may not be seen for the eye itself, but then once you put that camera on there, you can definitely see that movement. And that's kind of the one y'all saw on the table. And, you know, for information that we have on our website, you know, as you go on to the website where it's tcq.texas.gov, you'll see the tab on the left-hand side where if anything's happening within the state of Texas that, you know, that we're responding to or have our attention on the emergency response side, that tab will light up and move over. So these are kind of just some examples where, you know, we had Hurricane Laura or the City of Lake Jackson incidents or the ITC terminal fire, that tab would light up. You can click on it. It'll take you to the specific page, and it'll give you every information that you need, you know, for that incident. So kind of at that point, you know, we have our Title VI information, and we'll be around, and I'll turn it over. And, you know, we'll get to the next step.
So thank you for the presentations. Hopefully that was helpful. And now it's your turn. We want to hear from you. If you are interested in asking questions that from what you've heard tonight or other questions, we invite you to go ahead and come up to the microphone, and the floor is yours.
Hi, I can start us off if that's okay. So my name is Azul, and I just feel like it was a lot of information presented, which is great, but I think it's important to acknowledge other people's learning styles. Okay, let me get my thoughts together. So I think overall, one thing that I want to ask is specific about complaints and how communities are being engaged intentionally. So is there data collected about the amount of complaints in each community? And is there an assessment made to ensure equitable community engagement is being done? And are there community liaisons?
Go ahead. I think Anita's ready to answer that question about complaints.
I think that's such a good question and an important one. It gets me thinking about all the things we could be doing a little better. But we do have an annual enforcement report. We do track complaints very closely. We produce that information and provide it publicly. It doesn't get down to the community level. It gets down to the region level. I do know that our regional offices do make attempts to reach out to the community. They live in those communities. They go to public events and have outreach events as well. I think we could do more. Like, I think this is important to hear because I really wish we could do more, and we probably should put more focus on doing it more. But I wanted to ask you, when you do say community, do you mean like neighborhood to neighborhood?
Yeah, yeah? Definitely. Each neighborhood has its own specific needs, its own barriers to access this information. So I think being able to utilize your resource as a state organization and the network of partnerships that y'all do have to be able to provide kind of like a plan community by community to just make sure people show up and are aware of, you know, the things that could impact them and their quality of life overall.
That's some really good feedback. I mean, I think we need to take that back and really think about how we do that better.
And I mean, the community liaison roles would serve the agency well.
Yeah.
I don't want to take too much space, but I have a couple more questions that I would like to ask. And this was in regards to a corporation making an application for their permit. I don't think it was clear about the format and time window to notify the community. So what are the specifics of that?
Amy is going to go ahead and answer that.
So that can be different for different types of permits. And again, we don't have time today to go into every specifics for every type of permit. But generally speaking again, kind of generally, for the first notice, the notice, the NORI, the notice of receipt of intent to obtain a permit, when that notice comes out, that notice, generally speaking, goes out when we receive permit applications, and those permit applications are what we call administratively complete. So they're ready for the permit reviewer to start reviewing the permit, right, to make sure that it meets all of the necessary requirements and is protective of human health and the environment. Speaking generally, there's generally a 30-day comment period on the NORI. And then for types of applications that require a second comment period, the NAPD, the Notice of Application and Preliminary Decision, then again, you would have generally speaking, another 30-day comment period. There are types of applications where you might have a consolidated notice, so you might only have one 30-day comment period. There are some types of applications, for example, some types of renewals of applications where there's no actual change in what the company is going to do, that some of those have 15-day notice periods. So, again, we're speaking kind of in some broad generalities, but the notice itself will tell you how many days you have to comment on the permit application. And, again, generally speaking, that runs from the date that the notice is published in the newspaper.
Is there, I guess, like a network of partners that you reach out to distribute the notice that they can then share with their respective communities that they serve?
So most notices, they have a newspaper publication requirement, and then they're also posted on the Commissioner's Integrated Database. And for permit applications that are subject to Chapter 39, that were administratively complete on or after May 1st, 2022. We also have a new page we have an index page, and then it's separated out into the different media where those notices are posted, both the NORIs, the NAPDs, and also the plain language summaries for those particular permit applications.
And how is it language inclusive? And if so, what does it look like?
Yes. So that we have alternative language requirements in Chapter 39. And if the applicant is required to meet those alternative language requirements, then that alternative language publication is also included in the posting, and it would be included in the package that's mailed out to the mailing list. And again, to get on the mailing list, you tell the chief clerk you want to be on the mailing list either for a particular permit number or for the county. Now, if you select the county, then you'll get all the applications for the whole county, which in a county like Harris, that can be a lot. But those notices are also mailed to the mailing list.
But shouldn't, if we live in a hyper-diverse, community like Houston, shouldn't everything be language inclusive regardless of the application? Or
So there are requirements in our rules that list when an alternative language notice is required.
Okay.
So go ahead and ask one more question, and then we'll give the people behind you an opportunity, and then you can come back again if you would like.
Sorry about that. I just
got so excited. That's okay. Good question.
So there was mention of public comments on the commission's website. Can we see what other people are saying?
Yes. Comments are posted. People that submit formal comments, those comments are also posted on the Commissioner's Integrated Database on the permit application.
Awesome. Thank you for your time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Walker, and I'm president of Sunnyside Community Redevelopment Organization. And I want to post this question to Holly and the gentleman next to Holly. He was talking to you all about the air quality, and you were showing on the computer the sites where all the monitors is. But we have Sunnyside have an air monitor network in Sunnyside, and I didn't see any of those on those nodes on there. So do y'all see other nodes, or y'all just only work focus on the TCEQ nodes? Because we're on the City of Houston dashboard, but I didn't see us in that Sunnyside area.
Right. So what we're posting on our ambient air monitoring network are the monitors that the TCEQ is directly involved with, and then some of our sponsors. And I kind of mentioned that earlier, that we partner with local government, we partner with universities, we partner with some industry as well, and we host that data in addition to ours on the TCEQ webpage. Now, some of the community-based monitors is not the kind of data that we host on our webpage.
Okay.
Most of the data that we're hosting goes back to those federal requirements. And remember when I said that the Code of Federal Regulations kind of dictates the monitoring and the types of monitors? So those are more of what you're going to see on the TCEQ ambient air monitoring webpage, in addition to those state initiative monitors, which I mentioned as well, like the volatile organic compounds and hydrogen sulfide.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll follow up there just in terms of how we interpret other sources of air quality data. So when we're trying to look at our air quality plans, we're going to look for other sources of data, and those could be sensors within community networks, it could be satellite data, it could be a lot of different things. And so, you know, I was grateful that you came up and talked to us earlier, and so I've written down your information and going to look to see what type of data is collected through your monitoring network and see if that would be beneficial to some of our analyses.
Okay, that's good to know. And the next one, I think I mentioned this to you, Holly, but how could we get put in for a regulatory monitor in Sunnyside? I know you told me it's very expensive and everything, but I do believe we do need that in Sunnyside to deal with what all the criteria that's out there. We don't know what all air pollutants criteria is out there, but I think we do need one, which one was supposed to be designated to Sunnyside, but it didn't go to Sunnyside. They sent it to Midtown. So, but we would like for a regulatory monitor to be put in Sunnyside.
Okay, so I can appreciate that. There's a couple of ways that we would recommend that you kind of start that process.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing can be commenting on our annual monitoring network plan.
Okay.
And that's the plan that we present to the public on an annual basis for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it out for public comment, and then we summarize the comments and respond to the comments and attach the comments to the final document that we submit to the EPA on July 1st. So typically that document goes out for public comment about mid-April. It's posted on the TCEQ website under the spotlight. And if you sign up for ambient air monitoring announcements under the on the first page, it says sign up for updates. You can also get a notice by email.
Okay.
Of when that is posted. So,
all right.
So that's a good first step. Something else that we recommend is, you know, you can reach out to your council members, your representatives, your senator, and those type of methods as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Giselle. I'm just a resident of Houston. This question is relevant to your public involvement plan that you very briefly touched on in the beginning of the meeting. And it's sort of a loaded question, but it's just like a thought. So you emphasized the modernization of inputting environmental complaints on iPhones and online, as well as new technology being used to check the air quality. But a lot of the communities are in dire need of these tools. don't really have that much access to technology. So how do you plan to educate them on these resources and give them equal access?
So, you know, we are constantly looking at ways to make sure that we are reaching out to communities, and, you know, we are, you know, right now working on improving those methods like you talked about, and it's kind of an ongoing process, and that's, I understand that might not be an entirely satisfactory answer, but that's something that we are working on.
Okay.
I think I want to just add that for tonight's meeting, we sent out 4,000 postcards in both English and Spanish, so that we're hoping that by getting that information and being here with you in person tonight, that we're making some of those connections.
That's great. Thank you for that. So this is still relevant and also still kind of a loaded question. Well, how many people typically attend your NORI meetings?
So I think Lori might be better able to answer that, but yes. I don't know that there's a typical answer.
I think it's very much dependent on what type of permit it is and whether the community is gathering support to attend those public meetings. Sometimes we have public meetings that are required where zero people attend, and sometimes we have public meetings with well over 100, sometimes over 200 or 300 people, and it's just dependent on whether that community knows about that permit and has come in, or if the applicant has potentially already met with the community, then they may the public meeting may not have as many people because that applicant's already met with the community.
Okay. So beyond your translations and, you know, your mapping of these underserved communities in your public involvement plan, so how are you going to be able to measure the involvement of these communities in your public notice hearings? How will you be held accountable for that? Are you tracking the amount of underserved communities involved in your hearings?
Well, I would say that I think that this is a partnership too. I know that we have people who support and represent their communities, and it's good for us to hear from you. And so we do follow our regulations, and Amy can talk more about that. We have a number on our notices where if you need something special to help participate, that you can call that number so that we can try to accommodate. But we're here. We want to work with you, and if people let us know those opportunities or what they need, then we're going to do our best to work with you and to support you.
Thank you. And I think a lot of that comes with a community outreach aspect, because it's very hard to contest an opposition hearing if nobody shows up to NORI meetings, and much less the underserved communities that are being directly impacted by these industries. So thank you.
Thank you. Good questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Yvette Arellano, and I'm a community member in Magnolia Park, but I'm also the founder and director of Fence Line Watch, an EJ, or an environmental justice organization based here in the East End. First, I want to thank you for providing the translation services to us today, and to Ms. Amy Browning, thank you for always making yourself readily accessible. I can't quite say that about every division within the TCEQ, and I hope that this improves. My comments are on the complaint form. On your website, you have a complaint form. It's a little under 200 words, and it's in all English. I know you have quejas at tcq.texas.gov, and the complaints email too. But knowing that you have an English resource and you're working on translation and interpretation services, is TCEQ looking to translate that portal that is under 200 words that for now over a year, community organizations like myself and Fence Line Watch have requested this form be translated that is under 200 words.
So if we want to hand the mic down to Anita.
Yes, we hope to already have that in place today. And we've been working on it. my partner in crime's over here in the corner. So yes, we have purchased software. We're at the very end stages of purchasing the software to make that happen. Yes, it has taken a while, but we know it's very important to happen. I do want to describe what it's going to look like because it really is, it's going to have a different look and feel than what we have now. Where you're going to be able to say, I want to complete this information in Spanish. The questions will be in Spanish. The responses will be in Spanish. And then that gives us an indication that whoever calls you back, the investigator who calls you back to discuss your complaint, should be able to speak to that complainant in Spanish as well. So we really wanted to get this out already. My goodness, we were gunning to get this done by today. But yes, it'll be on the horizon, right around the corner. We have people just waiting to get their hands on that software to get it all built. We're also going to be having it in Vietnamese and Mandarin following, and then we're exploring other languages as well.
Being that it's been over a year we've had this request on board, do you have a timeline for when that's going to go into effect? End of this year, beginning of next year?
We're expecting it at the end of the month.
Okay. My follow-up question continues to be with the complaints form. Yep. Now, when we call in to TCQ, like today, there's an odor event, and folks who came to this event, I'm sure, smelt it. Whenever we call the complaints form, complaints and the Air Division shoots us over to Harris County or the city. And I know you said you work with other municipalities on trying to gather these complaints. When we're ushered away from TCQ and over to the city, and we file that complaint, is that complaint also being logged with the TCEQ, or do we have to request it to be logged with TCQ and then also call the city?
So historically, we've had a process of if we receive a complaint in the regional office, and it's not our jurisdiction, but you're right. The locals share authority with us. So you have a strong environmental program within the local counties and cities. We're likely going to refer that to them. They're overseeing the same set of rules that we are, right? They have taken authority over whether it's the county or whether it's the city. They have taken authority to oversee the program there, right? We haven't traditionally documented every one of those situations. And it's been a concern of mine because I really want to have a record of that because of these questions that we get exactly like yours, that there's a concern that is it passing, you know, did we receive the complaint? Do you have a record of receiving the complaint? Was it indeed forwarded to the local county? So that we can prove it up, right? We don't want this to be a casual activity. We want every step of that process documented.
Yeah, and the reason why I ask that is because the TCEQ also gives environmental stewardship awards. So if there's no track record from us being told, go call the city or go call the county, and we're complaining, as we should, to bad neighbors, and the TCEQ continues to give out environmental stewardship awards, then you don't have the proper information. And so you're painting a facility that could potentially be a repeat offender as an environmental hero because they don't have any complaints against them. Does the TCEQ use the complaints page to evaluate for that award?
I think that's a really good question. I don't think I'm the correct person to ask about the Environmental Excellence Awards, but I just know that the new complaint process will document every time we get a complaint, even if it's referred to a local jurisdiction. So we will have a record of it that we can refer back to, which is probably a nice suggestion to, now that we have that information, if you file your complaint online, but it's just becoming incredibly common now, where folks are using our online portal to file complaints. It wasn't even used that much 5 years ago, but now, as you might expect, the way we are, more and more people are using that portal to file complaints. So now we will have a record. And I don't know if anybody else. I'm sorry.
One more question and one comment, and I'm done. My follow-up question is with the NORI process. So you said that there are two times that there's a notice. The first time is with notice of intent, and the second one is the draft permit or the draft decision. Currently, the public only has the ability to comment on NAPTI, the second notice. Is that correct?
No.
Okay. How can we get engaged in commenting on the NORI? And if we comment on NORI, do we also get response?
So all timely filed comments are responded to in the formal response to comments. And so, yes, you can submit comments on the NORI the same way you do on the NAPTI, and that those comments are included and considered and answered.
Thank you, Ms. Browning. And then my last is a comment. So I've been to permit hearings by the TCEQ, and one of my concerns is that the technical review piece also has a description of our communities that are impacted by the permits. And so many times we get zoned or designated as an industrial zone or industrial area. Acknowledging that Houston doesn't have any zoning, with the description that technical provides, I have asked, how do you come to the description of saying an X community has three churches and two schools that will be affected when your current technical team uses Google Maps to identify community points of interest? Is TCEQ looking to have more in-person sort of going out into the community, driving around, and identifying these sites? Because so many times a community can have many churches and many daycares that don't show up on Google Maps.
I don't think any of us here today would have an answer for that.
Okay.
But thank you for raising the concern.
And I just wanted to once again thank you for the translation services. And just leave with, can you quickly describe your Office of Public Interest for those of us who aren't aware of what the Office of Public Interest does? Thank you.
Yes, so the Office of Public Interest Council, they are a separate office within the agency, and they represent the public interest. That's what they do, generally speaking.
And we have a representative in the back. He might stand up and or come up if he would like to come up. So if you have any questions, he's in the back.
Yeah.
Hi, good evening. My name is Priscilla. I'm here representing the Super Neighborhood 65 and 82, which includes Magnolia Park, Manchester, Smith Edition, and Harrisburg, which is 77011 and 77012 zip codes, which is this community here. I was following through the slideshow about how we can access information on the monitors. And so just using my mobile phone, Tamis was offline, and it said it was offline for about 4 days or 2 days. How often does that happen? And what steps are taken, you know, to cover while it's down for maintenance? And how often does that happen is my more important question.
So I'm not officially part of the data group that manages that system, but I do know that they have software upgrades from time to time that do require the system to be down, and that actually TCEQ in general had a server upgrade not too long ago that required the whole server for everything to be down for a few days over a weekend. So it may be one of those situations that you were experiencing. It does not happen very often.
Okay.
And I access the data all the time.
Sure.
In my job. So it's very infrequent, usually with a software upgrade.
Okay. So are those times or those windows documented, and what is done to fill those gaps when things are not being monitored because it's being maintained.
Okay, so I will clarify that just because you can't access the data because TAMIS may be down or the server is down, it doesn't mean our air monitors have stopped monitoring.
Okay.
So our air monitors are active 24 hours a day in the air monitoring sites, and we have a data logger that will be collecting the data, even if it's not communicating the data through a modem to our server, and they backfill that, information.
Great, thank you. And then I guess my
Just 1 second. It is now 8 o'clock, and we have told the school system that we will be out by 8:30. So wrap up your question. We'll try to get another question from each person in line, but we will have to be out of here by 8:30 as we've promised the school system.
So my second part is I heard a few times mentioning the gap between community getting information and you all posting meeting information. Because I'm active with the civic club and civic organizations here locally, some of us are registered with the Secretary of the State office for civic clubs. That's a whole database of access information that you can... I said it backwards. I'm thinking in Spanish. That's a whole directory that you guys can access to have more information about civic clubs here locally. Those of us who are very interested, maybe we don't check the website that you all post that information on. And sometimes those postings are too wordy, to be honest. But anyway, that's a whole database of, you know, directories that you all can reference to civic clubs here at the civic city level, I guess, or different county level. But anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for this information. It really helps for us to hear from you, so we appreciate that.
Hello, everyone. My name is Oscar Lazaro. So I'm a community coordinator for THEA, or Texas Health and Environment Alliance. I'm not really speaking on their behalf today. I'm speaking on behalf of, you know, my own family, my community. But I just wanted to make sure that I state this concern. So it seems like we've heard a lot about translation services, translation in general. I really do appreciate that. That means a lot to those of us who come from Spanish-speaking families who've been translating, you know, government documents our whole lives. That's a big step. But I wanted to ask, well, before I get to that, it seems like a lot of this process for people who don't speak English, a lot of the burden of communicating falls on the community itself. And I think that that definitely needs some work. So my question is, does the TCEQ, I know we're all in different departments and it's a big agency, but generally speaking, I was wondering if the TCEQ places any kind of priority on hiring people of, you know, different multilingual capacities. I think that's a huge step in engaging in cities like Houston. I know Texas is very diverse as a state. I just have not seen a whole lot of stakeholder engagement in languages other than English, and I think that that wouldn't be too much to ask. So is that a priority?
So I think I can help answer a little bit on that, although it's outside of the commissioner's cluster. We do have people going into school systems trying to get our next generation of employees from our diverse state. And so we are sending people out into the different schools to try to get people interested in coming to TCEQ and to so that we look like the communities that we're supporting. And then I will also note from the Office of Chief Clerk, for several of my positions, I put that speaking Spanish or a different language is preferred. And so that gives that person a step up because we do want people who are able to speak multiple languages. And we do in the Office of Chief Clerk have an interpreter that was a previous high school Spanish teacher that works just for the Office of Chief Clerk.
Okay. I know it's a workforce development question, so thanks for answering that.
Thank you.
Good evening, and also I'm glad that you're here. My name is Juan Parras, and I live in the Houston East End. Several questions, and I'll be quick, and you don't have to answer if you don't have time. But the RNP rules, they were very publicly available, and they no longer are. And we are told that they don't want it public because it could give information to terroristic, you know, people that are terrorists and may use that information to bomb the Houston Ship Channel. But it is very important to our communities to know how risky their lives are, considering that should happen. So I think that should be public information. The other issues is obviously ozone. We keep talking about ozone. And I think we'll continue doing that for the next 5 or 6 years because there doesn't seem to be any real initiative to address that. Every time I come to public meetings, the ozone standards are still under non-compliance and nobody justifies it as to why it hasn't been met. So I don't see anything changing in the future. And I was sad to hear that enforcement actions take 2 to 3 years. I mean, some of us cannot wait 2 to 3 years, especially if you die in one of those incidents. So that was pathetic. Do you have an environmental justice policy? Nobody mentioned the environmental justice communities, which is what Manchester and a lot of communities that are on the fence line are going through. And I don't know if the state has an EJ policy, but if it does not, it should have one by now. That executive order was passed in 1994. Let me see here. And I have more questions, but I will submit them in writing. But again, I'm glad to see you here, but I'm strongly dissatisfied with having public meetings and no action taken actually from the TCEQ. And if that is, if it's not going to happen, why have public meetings, okay? Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the information. I think we could. Did we have any? Okay, go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Jennifer Hedaya. I'm the executive director of Air Alliance Houston, and I think my question's probably going to go to Amy because I don't believe there's anyone here from permitting, if I'm correct, right?
Not up here.
Okay, all right. So Air Alliance Houston submits formal comments in opposition to permits. And so I was thrilled to see the slide about why you should submit comments. And I've read many RTCs, more than I can count over the last year. And at the end of every RTC, which is responded point by point in detail, there's usually a line that says, even with all of the above concerns formally submitted, the executive director has not changed their opinion about the permit application. Can you give us some examples, criteria, of when comments submitted formally by those of us in the community can change the outcome of a permit application at the executive director's level?
So I will tell you that I have seen changes made to permits in response to comments, and I have seen that documented in RTCs that I've worked on. I couldn't give you an example off the top of my head. I worked on a bunch, but I have seen it. It does happen. Generally, it is because you have identified an issue, and when we read the comment and we look at the issue and then we look at the condition that you might be specifically asking about, mm-hmm. we see that, yes, that condition needs clarification, or there was a question about perhaps BACT, best available control mm-hmm. technology, if it's an air permit. Generally, I work mostly on air permits, so I couldn't say too much about waste or water, but sure. I assume that the same thing is true there. So it would be something that is specific that when the permit reviewer and the attorney reviewing it read it, say, yes, there is an issue and we need to look at that and perhaps make a change to the permit application. But also, by the time you get to the draft permit process, mm-hmm. that application has gone through extensive review to determine that it's protective of human and health and the environment by the time it gets to that point.
Can I do a quick follow-up?
Sure.
So I understand that there's been reviews by the time the public comment period happens. So could the public comment period happen sooner?
Well, there's the comment. You can also comment on the application,
right.
The NORI. So you can
which
submit
we do,
comments
right,
throughout,
which we
right?
do. Mm-hmm.
But
again, by the time you get to commenting on the draft permit, the draft permit is a result of that extensive review that has already happened.
So at the point of the NORI, what is the most efficient way for community members to get access to the application?
So the application is posted in the public place and at the regional office and at headquarters, and that information is provided in the notice of where, and I just say a public place because it's different depending on where in the state you happen to be. It's often a local library, for example, is where it's posted.
Okay, so for comments to be considered before the draft permit's completely reviewed, it has to be within the NORI 30-day after accessing the application at a public library.
Well, I mean, I think that if you want to, if you have a comment on the NORI, then, you know, you submit those comments. But it's all part of a process. So I'm not...
Okay.
I wouldn't say that that's the only time your comment is going to be considered. Comments that you submit on an application are considered when we review them when we draft the RTC.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Shiv Srivastava. I'm the policy researcher at Fence Line Watch. I'd like to take this moment to thank you guys for holding this meeting and realizing that y'all are real, not just in a Zoom window. So I have some quick questions, being mindful of time, and some comments. Firstly, I was wondering what alterations or adjustments will TCEQ be making to the attainment determination or the reasonable further progress, SIP, as far as how this is conducted. In about 6 days, we are going to be officially redesignated as non-attainment for the 2008 and 2015 NAAQS ozone standards. The request for extension by TCEQ was denied by US EPA. For the 2008 and the 2015 standard, several deadlines have been requested, some granted, some not granted. But the modeling that TCEQ continues to put forward continues to fail each time to actually account for what's going on. TCEQ contends that there's actually a downward trend in ozone. But despite this, they keep asking for one-year extensions using photochemical modeling and using weight of evidence and RACM and RACT and the other criteria, but it continually fails to actually see where things are heading. And so we continue to be in non-compliance. So is TCEQ considering changing the manner in which they conduct this so they can get a more accurate read on what's actually going on in our community?
Thanks for your comment, and I'm going to try and address the question, I guess, in a couple of ways. So you're right, we're going to start the new processes for the attainment demonstrations and RFP for both standards. And at that point, we have to follow the Clean Air Act and the guidance that's set forth, right? So we have some processes that we have to go forward and do. The agency is going to be evaluating the data that's there and trying to understand what's keeping the area in non-attainment to develop these plans that are coming. I want to say that we're conducting a lot of research to try and understand this problem as well. The agency was just involved in a air quality field campaign in the Houston area over the past two summers to try and collect a lot more data to help us inform our plans more. So we're going to try and take that with a lot of other information to bring forth the best plan that we can. I can't say specifically what's going to happen yet. We're still trying to see what we can do.
Okay. Kind of a follow-up to that, as far as the 2015 standard with the ozone transport rule, kind of the good neighbor rule, will TCEQ be using the four-step framework put forth by the EPA, or are they going to continue to use the three-step framework that TCEQ came up with?
I guess I don't know how things were going to progress with that moving forward, so I don't have a specific answer to that.
Okay. Just two more really quick ones.
We have to finish like I said, we have to be out of here by 8:30, and we have, and we're already 15 minutes over.
Got it.
So it's got to be a quick one, so I can get one question from each of the people behind you.
All right. So I will be brief, and this one's for you, Amy. Again, nice to see you in person. So really quickly, I know that the plain language summary seems to be kind of rolling out now. I know May 1st, 2022. The new rules kind of went into place. With the plain language summary, I kind of would like a little bit of clarity. So I know it's part of the public input process, the public input plan within the public participation plan, like the PIP inside of the PPP.
Okay, so the plain language, there's a plain language summary that's a requirement of Chapter 39 for permit applicants that are subject to Chapter 39. That plain language summary is posted on our new notice website along with the NORIs and the NAPTIs for each of the media. The public involvement plan, which is something that's a subset of the public participation plan, we rolled out the form for applicants for that a couple of weeks ago for them to start using. And for applicants that may not be subject to Chapter 39, then they would have to come up with a plain language summary. But for applicants that are already subject to Chapter 39, they can use the plain language summary that they've already prepared.
Okay, so just really quick. So that portion would be for those that aren't actually covered by TAC 39 specifically. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hello, I'm Genesis Granados. I'm a resident of the Second Ward and also the Environmental Justice Coordinator for Air Alliance Houston. And I'm going to be also asking about language access as many other folks. As you can see, it's actually a big issue in the work that we do. So are you going to hold non-English speaking meetings in the future? We are thankful for interpretation, but just having interpretation present does not mean that the TCQ is actually doing intentional language justice work and inclusion as well. If the expectation is for the audience to be the only ones using equipment, that's not really inclusion. U.S. presenters should also be using equipment. We only have English speakers. Where are Spanish speakers?
So that's a good question. And if people want to ask their questions in Spanish, our interpreters will say it, will interpret for us so that anyone who wants to speak in Spanish may speak in Spanish, and the interpreters will interpret it. And and then we will answer back, and the interpreters will interpret that. So I know it's not always ideal, but that way English or Spanish you hear. I don't know if that helps answer some of your question.
It answers the fact that language seems to not be a priority for y'all, considering that Houston is one of the most diverse cities, and the fact that language seems to be always a constant issue just really shows that you're not really putting the effort to connect to those communities. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I'm the last one, huh?
But not the least.
Yeah. Good evening, and thank you. I thank everyone here in attendance. My name is Ana Paras. I am the co-director of Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services. We have been doing this work in the community for about 30 years, and it's always fallen on communities to do translations, do the mail-outs, and we're glad this is happening, but And everybody's commented on pretty much every question I was going to ask. The opportunities for public involvement and for being meaningful, will there be any technical assistance given to communities that are, well, we've already had the comment, they do not have the means to computers. And that is an issue that we have in our communities and particularly here in this area. We can advocate for this. We can try and come out with computers, but it is left to partners, and you refer to us as partners, and we've been here. Is there going to be any technical assistance for these communities to get maybe one or two laptops or something for them to start learning how to do this? And also your air quality data, It should be accessible and easy. It's very difficult, even for some folks that this is what we do, is try and follow. But it's still not enough. It's a very complicated database, and it isn't enough. So if that's my question. And I had a question on the the complaint form that somebody else raised already, and you kindly answered the question that it's coming in a month, and I appreciate that. But I think the state needs to do more. They need to do more for these communities on the fence line that have been suffering for a long time, and it's left to us, community organizations, schools, and everybody else here to be doing the work that you should have been doing a long time ago. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're at 8:21, 1 minute and then no more. We can't do any more. So there's one lady behind, and thank you, Ms. Perez. And these are really great comments. I like the community liaisons, the ability to have computers in the community to get that technical assistance. We're listening. We'll bring it back to our offices. We'll see what we can do. I will say that
I would just mention too, and just to mention, EPA is putting a lot of things out there too that you might look at. And they are specifically putting grant opportunities and things out there for communities.
So this has to be, I'm sorry for the gentleman that has stood up. This
has to be
the last person. We can't have any more after this.
So, I will be very quick. So mine is just a comment. I feel like my name is Annie Lagos. I am an educator and a resident of the east side of Houston. I think it's very unfair for you to have like that amount of time with people sitting outside, just like talking to people and having us wait until 6:30 for you to rush us at the last moment because you know that you have a limited amount of time here. And so I think that this should be put first. You should have your information first, and then your comments, and then afterwards, if people want to talk to experts, then they can go and do so afterwards. But I think that it's very rude for you to cut the community short on things that should be important to y'all. We're trying to give you our comments. We're trying to give you our feedback, and I think it's very rude to have all that time wasted in the beginning when you could have left that at the end and have enough time for everybody to ask the questions that they needed to ask. So maybe try to readjust it for next time so the community can be heard.
Thank you. I understand that. So I'm sorry we have to stop. We do have to stop, but you want to speak to one of the people afterwards.
Sí, me llamo Manuel Reyes. Quería hacer un comentario acerca de donde vivo. En esas juntas me gustaría ver un poquito más de representación de la comunidad. No veo a ninguna representación de la
We're going to take all your comments, but just make
sus comentarios, señor. Solo vamos a usted haga su pregunta, vamos a
so that they understand what's going on.
Sí.
Okay?
Para que
puedan
Okay, está bien. Pero para que ellos escuchen que me gustaría que habría una miembro de la comunidad para que pueda estar aquí representando no nada más a ustedes, pero a su comunidad y diciéndoles de su propia voz. ¿Qué es lo que, cómo le han ayudado a ustedes a su comunidad y a la persona que hizo una, que se quejó, que puso la queja?
So what I would like to see is not only you guys, but a member of the community here talking about the complaints and the comments that they received and also representing the community from the complaints that you have previously received.
Gracias por su tiempo y me gustaría ver más representación de mi comunidad aquí arriba.
Thank you for your time and I would like to see more representation for my community up here with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I want to thank you for coming out. This isn't your last opportunity to talk to us. You met some of our experts. Hopefully you got their information. We're listening. You can email us. We had the Title VI email address. please feel free to reach out to us. We're here. This is just a start so that you can see us person to person. And so thank you for coming out. Thank you for TCEQ staff for speaking, and also the school system for being here, and our great interpreters for helping us. So have a very good evening.